Made the same mistake myself more than once. Well, good afternoon, everyone. It's really a pleasure to be able to share today with you. Certainly had a beautiful trip up here yesterday. Given the weather forecast, we hope we have as nice a trip home tomorrow. We'll see how that goes. But for the moment, we're enjoying it immensely. I have a scroll from which I would like to read. Actually, that's a little pretentious. It's not a scroll. It was only easier to carry it rolled up. So it comes across in the form of a scroll. But it says, having spent 12 years working there, Mr. Richard Pennelly is no stranger to Canada, where he will be returning in June to assume the responsibility of superintendent for the Vancouver, B.C. district. For the past school year, Mr. Pennelly, 37, and family have been in Pasadena for postgraduate studies at Ambassador College. Here's the line I really like. Chicago born, partly of Italian ancestry. You'd never know it talking to him. Chicago born, partly of Italian ancestry, Mr. Pennelly came to college in 1956. After hearing the broadcast the previous year. This document is from the April 1st, 1974 Worldwide News. You remember that, Richard? You did a little bit. I remember it because I wrote it. And the Canadian regional directors were at a conference in Big Sandy in 1974, and I believe that's the first time I met Mr. Pennelly. I don't believe the wives were with you at that time, maybe they know. And it was just 2 months before my wife and I would be heading as ministerial trainee to Edmonton, Alberta. And Edmonton is where the Pennellys had pastored for 9 years previous. When we got to Edmonton, the influence of the Pennellys was still very strong among the members there. And as time would go by, the Pennelly influence would affect our lives in ways that we had never anticipated as well. But I dug that article out of the Worldwide News Archives this week, and that the rest of that article gave details about their history in the ministry and going back to Canada. And it ends with this statement. He and his wife, the former Mary Porter, Jonathan 11 and Adrian 9, are looking forward to returning. Who would have thought that 40 years later I might be writing an article for One Accord that says they're looking forward to retiring? But such is the case. But one thing that we learned from Richard and Mary over the years is that the focus of their lives was not on themselves. It was on God and His people. And I know that they would not want the spiritual focus of a Sabbath service message to be on them. But at times like this, you know, that have a focus on individual milestones. They make all of us focus on some of the greater lessons of life that are relevant to all of us. So I want to talk today about looking back, taking stock, and moving on. I remember as a 15-year-old learning to drive for the first time, and I got behind the wheel for the first time. My dad had taken me way out into the country, an isolated area, to minimize the chance of damage to either people or property, and put me behind the wheel, and after a few lurching attempts on that standard shift car, I got to going, and I got the hang of it pretty quickly, I thought. It was really good. We were cruising along. I was feeling pretty secure. Wasn't quite ready to hang an arm out the window and steer with, you know, one hand, but I thought, this isn't so bad, this isn't so tough, and I was feeling pretty confident about it. My dad reached over and put his hand over the rearview mirror, and he said, "What's behind you?" And I wanted to say nothing, but I wasn't sure, because I hadn't looked. I hadn't been checking my rearview mirror, and instantly I learned a lesson that, you know, driving is going to have a lot of lessons in it. One of which is pretty basic, and that is you need to check your rearview mirror pretty regularly. Now, there are milestones in life, such as birthdays and anniversaries and even retirements that they almost, by the nature of them, they make us look back in the rearview mirror of life. We can't consider where we are without looking back at where we've been. But just like in driving, we need to do that occasionally. Why? Why do we need to look back occasionally on where we've been? You can't drive by the rearview mirror. Don't anybody go out today and say, I think I'm going to try to go home looking in my rearview mirror. See if I can keep it between the lines. But God does tell us to go to the past frequently for a specific purpose. And the fact is, by looking in the rearview mirror of life, by looking back, we can learn a lot about ourselves and a lot about life and a lot about God as well. Somebody said one time, history doesn't look like history when you're living through it. But the first thing you know, years have gone by and you're remembering things you lived through as though you're looking at a history book. The word remember is in the Bible over 150 times, and a number of those times are admonitions from God to take the time to remember. In Psalm 143, in verse 5, here's a wonderful principle. I don't know how old David was when he wrote this, but you just get the feeling he was probably a bit older. In Psalm 143, in verse 5, he said, I remember the days of old. I meditate on all your works. I muse on the works of your hands. I remember the days of old. I think on all your works. I meditate on all your works. I muse on the work of your hands. This is a great principle. God does tell us to spend time remembering, but to do it in a certain way. Because when we humans remember, we see the good and the bad and the ugly of life. But the point of the whole exercise is found in the theme of scriptural instruction from God to remember is to put life in the context of what is God doing? Here's what we have done, but how does it fit in with what God is doing? Whenever we remember our lives, we often remember the works of human hands. But as God's people, He trains us to put all the works of human hands in the context, the larger context of His hands. What is He working through all of this in the life of us humans? What was He working back then? What is He working now? Now, typically, when we remember the past, when we look in that rearview mirror of life, past events usually evoke either a pleasure or a pain reaction. The things we remember are usually memorable for their pleasure or for their pain. If we focus, though, on the past, if our focus is what was pleasurable or painful for us as individuals, then we can miss the point of the exercise of walking with God. Because what is most important is to put everything, pleasure or pain, in the context of the work of God's hands. How have these experiences helped us to come to the unity of the faith and the knowledge of the Son of God? How have our experiences helped us to come to a full-grown man, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ? That verse is Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 11. Let's turn there because I want to read a little bit more. We often read these verses in terms of the present. And that's proper, that's correct, that's well and good. That's probably the primary way we should see it. We should always be thinking about these verses. Ephesians 4, beginning in verse 11, He gave some to be apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, some pastors and teachers, for the equipping of the saints, for the work of ministry, for the edifying of the body of Christ, till we all come to the unity of the faith and the knowledge of the Son of God, to a perfect man, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ, that we should no longer be children tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine, by the trickery of men and the cunning craftiness by which they lie in wait to deceive, but speaking the truth in love may grow up in all things into Him who is the head, Christ, from whom the whole body, joined and knit together by what every joint supplies, according to the effective working by which every part does its share, causes growth of the body for the edifying of itself in love. So as I said, we often look at that in the context of right now. How are we doing this now? But there's also a looking back element to these verses. Because for us as a body to come to the unity of the faith was a long process. It's a lifelong process. It's a journey. It's a lifelong journey. And it has stories in it of living and learning, succeeding and failing, and growing and overcoming. All of us together, growing up into Him. The whole body is the story of the church at any given point in time. Each one of us has our story, but all of our stories are linked together. When we look in the past, we look in the rearview mirror of the church, all of our stories are linked together with other people. Our individual lives intertwine. You can pick any of these elements here that we just read, and each one of them has a story. Have you gone through things which helped you to mature? Have you gone through things that helped you attain more of a measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ? If you have, there's a story behind it. Have you gone through things in life that put you on the boat where you were tossed to and fro, or where the church was tossed to and fro with winds of doctrine or the trickery of human beings? If you have been, there was a story behind it. There's something we look back on that made us grow. Have you ever been in a position of having to speak the truth in love? What was the story? What was the situation? These are not just nice words on paper. These tell about our lives being joined and knit together. Has there been effective working of the body in one way or the other? I'm sure the Pinellis can look back on many years of their lives being impacted by other people. And it was the effective working of the body. The body working effectively according to God's Spirit to help one another. God has supplied so much of what we need through other people who have His Spirit. So we look back and we spend time remembering our lives in God's way of life, and remembering those stories are valuable if we take it to the next level, which is taking stock. Taking stock. What I mean by taking stock is drawing the lessons out of those experiences. These verses tell us that we just read, they tell us that we are not individual Christians out in some isolated orbit in our relationship with God. If there is a lesson we've learned through the years, and that it should be that we are not to be out in our own independent orbit. We have a, what does it say here, the whole body? In verse 16, when we have that whole body experience, we see a tremendous benefit, because not only do we take stock of our own lives, we also have the ability through a closeness with one another to take stock of other people's lives too. We learn from their lives, and we share our lives with others as one body. And it's always with the end goal to draw the right lessons of life so that we can become a better people of God in service to God. In 2005, I asked Mr. Pinelli to take on a new job, a job which was, at its core, sharing the lessons of life with other people. That's really what the job was. It was sharing the lessons of life with other people. We asked him to focus on ministerial development because we saw clearly the need with an aging ministry to have new pastors, but those new pastors would have to be mentored. And so his job was to establish the systems for identifying and training future ministers and to train the trainers of those ministers. It was the principle of 2 Timothy 2:2, where Paul told Timothy, "The things that you have heard from me among many witnesses, commit these to faithful men who will be able to teach others also." His job, in essence, was to take stock of his ministerial experiences and translate those experiences into teaching lessons so that others could learn without having to learn from scratch. Is that not our job, all of us in this room? Is it not our job as Christians to first learn the lessons of life from the experiences we've been through, to see the work of God, and then to try to influence others where we have opportunity? Our opportunities will vary, but we all have opportunity to take the lessons of life and influence others and to leave a legacy for coming generations. Jesus told his disciples in John 4:38, "I have sent you to reap that for which you have not labored. Others have labored, and you have entered into their labors." Well, one of the great reapings of life is to reap the lessons from life experiences that others have learned, to benefit from that. And part of our labor is to do all that we can to prepare those who come to walk that path better than we did. Richard and Mary are veterans, but so are you. This is a veteran church. This is a veteran congregation. When they started, the church was a young church. And a young church is an immature church. But as the decades have gone by, hopefully God will judge someday that we have matured. The growth years in Canada were exciting years. There were thousands of new people coming quickly into the church. But the fact that thousands were coming in quickly meant that the majority was spiritually immature, because that's what we are when we start into God's way of life. And we have to grow in that. We have to grow because we were, at one time, we were all children and babes in Christ. I remember a few years ago going to the Houston Church 50th anniversary and thinking, here it is, 50 years old. When we started going to church in Houston, it was 7 years old. There was a small handful of people who had been in the church before it started, but most of the people were in the church. Of 350 people, probably 80% were in the church between 1 and 5 years. As a result, it was a baby church. It was a young church. And it had to grow over the years. But when we came in as a newbie, when you saw somebody who'd been in the church for 7 years, wow, they're long in the tooth. These are veterans in God's way of life. Now people can come into the church and walk around and find people. If I won't ask for a show of hands, but I know there are a lot in here who've been in this church over 30 years, 40 years, 50 years. And that's great. What kind of input do you think we would have if every person today could come up here and speak 5 minutes? And I guarantee you Mr. Pinelli would have a stopwatch on you if that was the time. But if every person in here could come in and just speak 5 minutes and relate the greatest spiritual lesson I've learned during my time in the church, I would guess, I don't know, I think we have, I was told 135 people here today. I would guess we probably, just doing some quick calculations, have over 3,000 years of church experience in this room, cumulative. That'd be a rough estimate. I may be wrong, but it's a lot. If we could record everybody's lessons and put them in a book called Lessons Learned, that would be a tremendous book to have. It would be an encouraging experience to have everybody talk about just one lesson of the many that you've learned that stands out to you. What a stimulating conversation that would be. My brother, that's one of the best things we can give to our children, our grandchildren, is to give them lessons. And if we are to be growing spiritually, we will be taking stock of the lessons learned. If we looked at all those lessons learned and considered how will they serve us in the future, what do you think we would conclude? Well, I think one thing overall, we would realize we don't come up with anything new that hasn't been experienced by God's people since the church began. Just because everything is different doesn't mean anything has changed. Just because everything is different doesn't mean anything has changed, because the mission, the calling, the goal, the way is unchanged from the beginning. The only thing that changes is us. How fast we can change, how deeply we can change is the issue. Spiritually mature people move past talking about events to moving to the lessons. What did we learn? And then making the changes in life based on the lessons learned. That's how a church matures. And as we spiritually mature, when God calls new people, whether it's the children born into the church or whether it is brand new people off the street, they will find a different church than most of us found when we first came in. It's a different church than the Pinellis first found when they were pastoring, when they first came into the church. Those new people who come must find a different church. They must find a different church than what we found years ago. A church that is maturing. And the church as a whole grows when we all can look back and take stock. There was a time in Paul's life when he wrote about this in Philippians chapter 4. In Philippians 4, in verse 11, Paul wrote something that can only be learned through life and through experiencing life. It's not a lesson that comes early in life. It comes later. He wrote in verse 11, "Not that I speak in regard to need, but for I have learned in whatever state I am to be content." If we have to learn something, that's an admission that we didn't know it to begin with. Otherwise, we wouldn't be learning. So he learned how to be content. I know how to be abased. I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things, I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. This is looking back on his life. He said, looking back, and here's some things I have learned. And now, the bottom line lesson when we look back and take stock, he wrote in verse 13, "I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." God is with us. He helps us through life. So it's very important to bring these things back to the work of God. But there's one more consideration. While looking in the rearview mirror and learning the lessons of life is important, it's sort of like doing it while you're driving, because while we're doing that, the road of life is unrolling in front of us. And it comes at a pretty fast pace. Life is going on. And looking back and learning lessons is really for the purpose of living a better life ahead. We have a lot of transitions in life. Even a time like this of retirement is just a transition to a different future. But the people of God are always moving on. We're always moving on. And that's where we always put our focus. The people of God always have their eyes on the future. And if there's one thing that we should have learned too over the years, is that God called us to be a people for the future. He built his church to provide a witness to the present, but he called his first fruits to be a people for the future. He tells us to keep his eyes on the kingdom, to be a people of vision, a people who have their hope and their faith and their confidence in the future, what is going to happen, and the work that lies ahead. And as we well know, God tells us, you ain't seen nothing yet. Think you've seen a lot, Richard and Mary? God tells us, you ain't seen nothing yet. Now, Richard, if I can ask a personal question, 40 years ago, when we were sitting in the press building doing that little worldwide news interview, if I would have asked you the question, "So, what do you see occurring in the church and in your life over the next 40 years? Do you think you could have come anywhere near predicting the reality of what has occurred? Absolutely not. Well, of course not. That's the way life is. None of us can predict what's going to come. Life is full of surprises in the short term. In the short term. Next year, 10 years from now, who knows what life is going to bring us. But God has taught us to be a people who can lift their eyes above the short term, to look down the road, and to keep our eyes on what we know is coming in the big picture, because that's really what we're living for and working for. So, you know, God puts us there. We may retire physically, but one thing is sure, we never retire spiritually. We never retire spiritually. We may shift our work responsibilities and our routines, but our spiritual work goes on day after day, continuing to learn and to grow spiritually and individually, and continuing to impact the lives of those around us. So no matter where life takes us, no matter how many years God gives us, we're all looking forward to a day when we unretire again. Mr. Meeker was telling me before services about being retired twice. You get retired and then life unretires you. The day when Christ returns, we all get unretired and we go to work on bigger projects than we've ever seen before. And we're going to join with others, all the others he has called, beginning with righteous Abel, and move on to bigger and better things. If we keep this in our minds, as the years go by physically, something happens to us that is not only good for us, but it's good for the entire church. It's found in Psalm chapter 92. Psalm 92. And verse 12. The righteous shall flourish like a palm tree. Now the righteous can be of any age. A young person can set their life on a track of pursuing righteousness. And when we do, your life flourishes. You grow in the fruit of God's Spirit. A palm tree is symbolic of longevity. It's not uncommon to see palm trees in the Middle East that are 200 years old and are still bearing fruit. So the righteous shall flourish like a palm tree. He shall grow like a cedar in Lebanon. And the analogy of a cedar was that of a strong tree. Those who are planted in the house of the Lord shall flourish in the courts of our God. They shall still bear fruit in old age. They shall be fresh and flourishing. In old age, our bodies slow down, but our spiritual lives can keep growing stronger. I like the marginal reference in the New King James where it says they shall be fresh. The margin says full of oil or sap. So Richard, can we say you're full of sap? No, but it says they will bear fruit in old age, be full of oil. That's symbolic of God's Spirit. Be full of oil and flourishing. But what's the purpose? To declare that the Lord is upright. This is the greatest lesson of life. The lesson that people should have learned and are able to affirm to others, to declare God is upright. He is my rock. There is no unrighteousness in him. Because you've been through life. You've learned this lesson so deeply. This should be the goal of all of us, old or young. I read a quote recently that when I read this verse, that quote stuck with me. It said, to finish well, you must live well. To finish well, you must live well. And that's true. But we of all people have come to learn that to live well is of God's doing. It's God's doing to declare that the Lord is upright. All of this is God's doing. The great historical remembrances in the Bible always steer us back to the workings of God. It is a milestone for some dear respected friends that has brought us here today, but really it's a weekend to honor God. It's His work. It's His way of life. It's His spirit. It's His calling. It's His love. It's His power. It's His faith. It's His patience. All that is done to bring us here and to keep us here is of His doing. All credit goes to God, but we are also thankful that you, Richard and Mary, have proven, as Paul put it in 2 Timothy 2:21, to be a vessel of honor, sanctified, and useful for the Master, prepared for every good work. Dee and I will be back here in June for Crystal and Wynn's wedding. It'll be another milestone in somebody else's life that will cause a lot of us to look back. When you go to weddings, those who have been married have a chance to sit and listen to those vows, and we think about our marriages. When you go to see a baptism, another milestone, you think about what it was like when you were baptized. If you're not married yet or not baptized yet, you can go to those milestone events and think about what it may be like for you. We have church anniversaries. We have wedding anniversaries. We have retirements. There are a number of milestones in life for different people that, even though it's for that particular person or people, everybody else associated with it uses those milestones to look back and to take stock and to think about how their lives will move on. And when it's done right, it helps us become better people. So as we all look back and take stock and move on from this weekend, I would like to quote from a section of Scripture that was Richard's favorite to conclude every pastoral training group with which he worked. It's what God said to Moses at the end of number 6. And I'll quote it for everybody in this room, but especially for Richard and Mary. God spoke to Moses and he said, "Speak to Aaron and his sons, saying, 'This is the way you shall bless the children of Israel. Say to them, the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. So they shall put my name on the children of Israel, and I will bless them.'"